come to his college colleagues, he would have either ended up as a CEO or one of the presidents of America. Most of the presidents of America come from Yale or Harvard. But, you know, during that time, he studied Bhagavad Gita and different scriptures like that, and he decided to dedicate his life towards following, living his life by these scriptures as well as giving his knowledge all over the world. He took a renounce order of life at that point and has been traveling throughout the world few times a year, every year, non-stop. He travels in all continents of the world, name it higher, Siberia or Africa and India. He is very popular in India among the youths in IIT and so many other institutes. He is invited to give lectures every time. He has more than 3,000 to 4,000 students, wishing to come and hear from him. So we are very thankful that he has taken his time to come here. Thank you very much.
They cite reasons such as too much pressure. So the fear that we are seeing in this contemporary day and age is a very special one, because the false promise of material happiness is dangling in front of everyone's nose. People feel that unless I get all that I'm supposed to get, my life is unsuccessful. Particularly, you can see with our friends who are coming from India to study in Australia, they have fear. I have to achieve a high standard. I have to become successful, otherwise how can I show my face back in Mumbai? How can I show my face back in the village? I haven't achieved the topmost success. My parents are depending on me. The family reputation is at stake. In India, people are thinking, oh, your son is studying in Australia and Melbourne. Surely he's number one in the class. Surely he's going to get the top job, because automatically that's what happens. So the pressure is on you now. And of course, there are great expectations for the overseas Indian students that you will send back suitable net gain. All this is pressing down on you. All these family obligations, social expectations. So you become fearful. What will happen if I cannot fulfill these ambitions? Indeed, we're seeing that those who have trained in the field of IT, they are most fearful right now. All that studying could be in vain as we scramble to try to get one job lead after another, one contract to another. The anxiety level is very high. How can you go back to your home country and say, well, I tried my best, but I could not achieve? No one will accept that. Your parents invested so much in you. You study in Australia. How it is that you did not become number one? This is the problem. So you become fearful of failing. Now, even if you happen to achieve your material goals, the fear problem is not solved. Tonight especially, I want to talk about a subject that is relevant not only for our Indian overseas students, but also for our native Australians. That fear in an affluent society, or fear in an affluent situation, is produced when there is too much choice. This is the latest psychological research that I'm going to present to you. Now, most people think that the more money you have, the more power you have, the more successful you are, the more options you'll be able to have for yourself, the more choice, the more freedom to choose, and therefore you'll be more happy. Surprisingly, psychologists are now discovering that the more choice you have, the less happy you are. I'm giving you the latest research from Yale University, which shows that as the amount of choice in your life increases, the unhappiness also increases, even to a point of depression. So I'm sure you'll be quite curious to hear about this. Let us take the USA as an example. In the past 30 years, the gross national product of the USA has more than doubled. Yet, the people are less happy from the psychological point of view. And depression is surging. So what's going on? You would think the more that people have to choose from, the more lifestyle options, consumer products, holiday destinations, all the things that make up the supposed good life. Why is it that a proliferation of these things is producing unhappiness? Now, we can divide people into two broad groups. One is called the maximizer. The other is called the satisficer. These are just terms made by economic and psychological researchers. So the maximizer, that's the savvy person who always researches all possible factors before making a decision. Before buying a product, checks all the reviews, searches the internet, reads all the discussion groups before you make a choice. And then you have the satisficers. Those are the, well, it's good enough type of person. I made a choice. It may not be the best, but it's good enough. The maximizers are the ones who are glorified in society today. This is the information age. Get all the information you need and more before you make a decision. You're afraid of not getting enough information. You're afraid of not weighing all the alternatives. This is the kind of person that's glorified. But these kind of persons suffer the most. Now, studies have shown that in regards to the maximizer type of person, in searching for jobs, they will get, generally, jobs that pay 20% more than persons who are easily satisfied. But they're less happy. They're less happy with the searching process and the outcome. Very interesting. You think, oh, by their high intelligence and power of choice and deliberation, they get jobs after exhausting research that pay 20% more. But these persons are less happy than those who just say, all right, I do a little searching, enough is enough, this is good enough, I'll take this. So we can see that the persons whom society glorifies as the savvy ones, the opportunists, the well-equipped chooser, these persons turn out to be less happy. Now, what happens when you make a choice? There's so many choices available to you in an affluent society. Materially affluent society, but spiritually poverty-stricken. Materially affluent. As soon as you make a choice, fear takes over you. Maybe this wasn't the right choice. There's so many other alternatives. What to do? As soon as you make your choice, the fear feeling hits you. I forgot to consider one factor. Has this happened to you? Just when you thought you had come to a resolution, then you pull out your plastic, your credit card, and you purchase it. I forgot one factor. This is what happens. This is fear. And it produces great anxiety. Now, psychological studies show that those who have the most choice and who take their choices seriously, they meet with the less satisfaction in life. they're less happy, and they're more prone to depression. So, what are some of the reasons why more choice produces less happiness? First of all, there's what's called the opportunity cost. Let's say you have 10 choices. You want to buy a new laptop, or you're choosing which holiday destination you go to, or even what you'll watch on television. How many television channels can you get in Melbourne now? Any of them? Over 50. Yeah, so if you're over 50. Yes. So, you get a feeling of power at first. You get a feeling of success. You're there with your remote control in your hand. You have over 50 channels. Probably you can get near 100, I think. Because I'm based in New Zealand. You can get 64 in Auckland, so certainly you have to be up near 100 in Melbourne. First, you feel that power of choice. I can choose. It's now 9 o'clock at night. I can jump between 100 channels. What will I watch tonight? I choose this channel, this program. But then while you're watching the program, you start thinking, but what about the other programs? Maybe there's something better. And so you become fearful. Maybe I'm not making the right choice. Maybe when I go to work tomorrow, all my mates at work will say, didn't you watch such and such last night? And I would have been watching something else. Oh, no. So, you can't enjoy. You can't be happy. In fact, you're fearful. I could be making the wrong choice. This is an example. It's called the opportunity cost. There's so many opportunities, so many choices, that you become fearful. Maybe I'm missing a better choice. I think I've got good, but maybe there's better. That always haunts you, that kind of feeling. Always haunts you. Maybe it's just about buying clothing. Is this the best pair of jeans I could get for the money? You walk up and down Swanson Street, or you search the internet, I've got to get the best deal. But as soon as you make the deal, oh no, maybe it wasn't the best. This happens every time. So, not only is there sorrow about opportunities that you lost, I should have chosen this, but instead I chose something else. There's also regret. You blame yourself. I'm supposed to be so competent. I'm supposed to be so expert. And I made the wrong choice. I'm sure it's happened to you sometimes. You have pride in your abilities to be a practical person, to make the right choice in the world. And sometimes you become bewildered. Sometimes you make a mistake and you punish yourself so much. Why did you buy that? Why did you decide to do that? Why did you go to this vacation spot and not that vacation spot? You fool. You punish yourself. Anyone remembering that? Why did you choose this course of action, this course of study? You should have known better. So much regret. So this contributes to the fear and anxiety because there's so many choices. You take it so personally. I am a member of the information age. I am a competent person. I'm from overseas. I'm from India, and my parents are putting such a weight on my shoulders. I'm the designated one. Yet, I've made this wrong choice. Very heavy psychological burden to bear. Now, the more personal responsibility that you feel for your choice, the more there is room for unhappiness. People are taught these days, you take the responsibility for making the best choice, the power is in your hands. So everyone heavily invests in making a particular choice, and therefore the opportunity for feeling acute failure is even more, because you invested so much of yourself in this choice. You're setting yourself up for a big fall. The bigger the personal investment in a particular choice, the bigger the distance you have to fall. Now, let's explain a very interesting tendency that psychologists have isolated just recently. It is that people constantly overestimate how long a good feeling will last, and they constantly underestimate how long a bad feeling will last. This is human psychology. So people are looking at their life, they're looking at the future, and they're thinking, when I get such and such a good feeling, it's going to go on and on and on. But they always overestimate it. And then people look into the future and say, even if I have to suffer a little bit, even if I have to experience some difficult times, that feeling will just last a short time. So they always underestimate that. This is the psychological tendency of human beings. Therefore, when reality hits them, they become very fearful. Oh no, just see how long this unpleasant feeling is lasting. Oh no, just see how short the good feeling lasted. They become fearful. What is going on in life? Things seem to be out of my control. What's the only way to cope with this gnawing feeling in your belly that things are out of your control? You must take intoxication. Therefore, intoxication, whether it's alcohol, marijuana, drugs, these things are a necessary part of Western so-called civilization. Now, those who are overseas students from India, you'll tell yourself, oh, we would never take intoxication. Ever. I mean, maybe for social purposes at the job, we may sip a little alcohol in wine. But not like, we will never drink like the Australians. It's not our family upbringing. But try to understand the social dynamics that produce the intoxication culture. It's the fear that comes from you're having to succeed. People want relief from that fear. Therefore, they have to take shelter of intoxication. They can't cope. It's too much. The fear of failing. The fear that you're not getting everything that someone else is getting. You're not getting ahead enough. You're not getting promoted enough. You're not getting paid enough. You know that fear? Someone's got the same job as you and making more? Very irritating feeling. So, all these kind of fears eat away at a person, in spite of having so many consumer choices, holiday choices, lifestyle choices. The more choices, the more unhappy people become, this research shows. Because they are just constantly telling themselves, did I make the right choice? Did I do the right thing for me? Such pressure is on you. Now, another tendency that also makes us fearful is that it has been shown how good feelings satiate and bad feelings escalate. That means any so-called good feeling that you get in life quickly loses its freshness. And any bad feeling that you get in life quickly increases in the anxiety and tension that it brings. just see the nature of the material illusion. You'd like it that the reverse would happen. Good feelings would escalate and bad feelings would satiate. But no, that's not how material nature works. The fact is that the good feelings satiate. They lose their freshness so quickly. And the bad feelings just go on and on and on. All this contributes to fear of failure, fear of not achieving all that you can achieve, fear of not getting all that happiness that you feel you can get. The more affluence, the more choice, the more so-called freedom, the less happy the people are. This is the reality, as demonstrated by latest scientific research. Now, I'll give you further proof of this kind of fear. In 1999, the New York Times and CBS News asked teenagers of wealthy families to compare their experiences with their parents' experiences in terms of growing up. 50% of the children from affluent, wealthy households said their lives were harder than their parents' lives. Now, why is that? What do you think? Why would 50% of the children of the wealthy say that their lives were harder than their parents' lives? These children were born with the silver spoon in their mouth, but why are they saying their lives are harder? Any of that? Too much pressure, they said. Too many choices, too much to learn, and the fear that you'll fail. The higher the perch is, the longer the distance is to fall. So the children feel that fear. So much expectation is on our shoulders. So much expectation from us. Such anxiety, such competition. Therefore, our lives are not as good as our parents' lives. We have to cope with so much pressure. We've got to get ahead in school. We've got to compete in the academic world. Compete in the business world. Compete, compete. We've got to at least maintain the status of our family, not to speak of increase it. The burden of expectation is so great. So these children, the sons and daughters of the affluent, 50% of them said our life is worse than our parents' life, even though we were born into this wealth, because the expectation of us is so great, and our own expectation of ourselves is so great. But just see. On the one hand, you're told that the more affluence you get, the more happy you'll be, the more free you'll be. But the actual facts show the opposite. The more affluence you have, the more choices you have, the more unhappy you are. You spend your whole day trying to make the best choice, and then you spend the whole night lamenting, agonizing. That actually wasn't the best choice. I could have done something else. The example is given by these researchers that suppose after so much analysis, so much study of the market, you decide to buy a BMW. So, when you first sit in that BMW, there's a feeling of happiness. Okay, this is my car, my BMW. I've picked it out. I know it's the best. Others don't have a car like this. But how long does that feeling last? It goes away very quickly, because then comes something that these psychological researchers call adaptation. You very quickly adapt to what you purchase, and the charm, the flavor dissipates quickly. So, after a short time, when you're driving your BMW, you start thinking, but maybe the Mercedes might be there. Even though when you bought the BMW, you told yourself, this is it, I've researched it thoroughly, this is the best choice. I'm not going to think about anything else. I'm going to purchase this car and be happy. You tell yourself that. But it doesn't happen like that. The honeymoon lasts for a few days, and then your nagging mind takes over. Is this car really there? I don't know. The drivers of the Mercedes, they're happier than me. What about the drivers on the big four-wheel drive? Jeez. They look happier than me. And then you start to eat away at yourself with anxiety, fear. I don't know if I made the right choice. I haven't heard anybody commend me for the right choice. Maybe I didn't make the right choice. Look, these things are real problems today. Too much choice, too much expectation, too much pressure on you. What are you going to do? How are you going to handle all this? You can blame yourself. Many people are doing that. Something's wrong with me. I couldn't keep up in the rat race. I couldn't keep up in the pursuit of happiness. Something is wrong with me. I'm not fit for the race. This is going on. And then there's depression. I want you to keep all these things in mind. These are contemporary fears born out of affluence and wealth. But these fears, although contemporary, they cause such disturbance in life. Don't think that, well, these are new kinds of fears, therefore they're not that strong and powerful. No. These contemporary fears are so powerful that even if indeed you achieve all your material goals, you can still become overwhelmed by this fear, and it can even lead to depression. Obviously, the intelligent person will conclude that if I'm going to be happy, I don't need more. I need internal awareness of my spiritual identity. I need internal awareness of the identity of the Supreme, of the identity of the individual soul and the Supreme Soul. I need that. Otherwise, I'll always be running outside, chasing this, chasing that. I'll have no time. I'll have no space for dealing with the real me. I'll simply be pursuing this outside of myself, pursuing that outside of myself, acquiring new possessions, acquiring new consumer goods, new relationships. People today are acquiring relationships like they acquire consumer goods. In this way, your life becomes completely overpowered by fear. So many choices I have to make, and I know some of them are the wrong choice. What can I do? Now, in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says something very interesting. In Sanskrit, Lord Krishna says, Vyadasyatmakabhujya ekeha kulunandara. In the minds of those who are too attached to opulence and sense enjoyment, the resolute determination needed to attain spiritual perfection, Krishna consciousness, is never achieved. You never develop that resolute determination which is necessary for you to attain the highest levels of spiritual understanding. Why don't you ever get that resolute determination? It's because of the attachment to bhoga, Sanskrit pilgrimage, enjoyment, material enjoyment, and Aishwarya, attachment to material wealth. When there's attachment, there also must be fear that you're going to lose what is so dear to you. Fear about what you're so attached to. Therefore, you never have the peace of mind, the clarity of mind to develop the determination, the resolution to achieve the highest goal in life. You'll always be very skitterish. I mean, scattered, very unfocused. This is Krishna's explanation of Bhagavad Gita. He says, Bahu Shaka Hiratascha, your intelligence is many branched, it's swayed in so many directions because there's so many choices. And you, as a member of the information age, are expected to be on top of all the choice possibilities. So this is the tragedy of today's living. What is supposed to give a feeling of exhilaration and liberation, that is, a huge number of choices, actually produces more misery, more unhappiness, even clinical depression. One last thing. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about the greatest type of fear beyond even what we've just been discussing. Lord Krishna, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, explains that in Sanskrit, svapam apisitaramasya tayate mahatomaya. If you take to Krishna consciousness, if you actually follow Krishna's teachings in Bhagavad Gita, then you will protect yourself from the greatest danger. What's the greatest danger that you should be afraid of? It is not that you'll lose your wealth. It is not that you will not complete your studies at the uni. It is not that you'll not be able to find a job in the field that you studied so long in preparation for. No, the greatest fear is that you'll lose your human form of life in your next birth, and you'll glide down to the animal species. According to Lord Krishna and Bhagavad Gita, that is the greatest fear. Mahato Vyat. I'll lose the human body with its advanced consciousness, and in my next life, I can take birth amongst the lower species. Plants, insects, animals. To lose the human form of life is the greatest tragedy. Therefore, it should be the greatest fear. Because as we said, the human body has the intelligence for understanding discussions like we're having now. We don't see the cats and dogs lined up here listening. They don't have the developed consciousness for such topics. But human beings, they're here. With their developed consciousness, with their advanced consciousness, they can listen. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna teaches that according to your consciousness at the time of death, you'll get another body. In other words, the consciousness that you have at the time of death is the sum total of your state of mind throughout your life. What you've been thinking about, what you've been cherishing, what you've been valuing, that has imprinted your consciousness and made like a photograph. So at the time of death, the sum total of what you've been mostly thinking about all your life, that's fixed in your consciousness, and it takes you to the appropriate body in your next life. This is how there is reincarnation. It's all based on your state of consciousness. different states of consciousness attract different bodies. So, the great sphere has been identified by Lord Krishna. Bhagavan Krishna said, the greatest fear you should have is that I may lose this human form of life and become what I don't know in my next birth. That's the greatest fear. So Lord Krishna explains that just a little bit of advancement in Krishna consciousness, bhakti yoga, sanatana dharma, will protect you from this greatest fear. So every intelligent person should be concerned about that. What is the system within which I'm living? What are my obligations and responsibilities? Just like if you're an Australian citizen living in Australia, you have certain tax responsibilities, GST responsibilities, voting responsibilities. It's like I'm a New Zealand citizen, so I always, every year around election time, I get a notice in my post box that you must vote. Is it so in Australia that you're required to vote legally?
Yes.
Yeah, so in New Zealand also. You must vote. I don't, but every month I get this reminder. This is your obligation as a citizen. You must vote. We're reminding you is actually a legal offense if you don't vote. So there are obligations. But what is the obligation you should feel to all of existence? Indeed, the source of all existence. What is the obligation you should feel in relation to that? No one cares about that. All we know is our temporary obligations to temporary people who happen to surround us at the moment, to temporary nations that appear and disappear from time to time. But we don't know our real obligation, which is to become Krishna conscious. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains that a little bit of advancement in Krishna consciousness, just a little bit, will save you from the greatest fear, which is that you'll lose this human body in your next birth, and you'll go down into lower forms. And it will take thousands of years for you to come back up to the human species. You see, animals have no karma. Only human beings have karma. So you can't commit bad karma activities in the animal species or in the plant species. Only as a human being can you make bad karma. Once you lose your human body, which is attained after passing through so many lower bodies, you finally make it to the human body. If you misuse that human body, the laws of nature send you back into the animal species. And you have to wait for your chance to develop again so the human body comes along. How do we know these things? You can read Bhagavad Gita, you can read Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the graduate study to Bhagavad Gita. All these things are explained very clearly by Lord Krishna himself. So let us be fearful of the right thing. Recently, when there was the tsunami last December, I read of one man from Auckland. He was in Thailand, Phuket, where all the damage was from the tsunami and so many lives were snuffed out. He was offshore doing scuba diving. So he was under the water. And then all of a sudden he looked at his depth gauge and he was shocked to see that suddenly he was 20 meters deeper than just a few minutes ago. So he's wondering, what's going on? Why all of a sudden am I 20 meters deeper in the ocean? So he swam his way to the surface, looked at the beach and just saw a devastation everywhere. Later, he found out what had happened. While he was under the water, the tsunami had passed over him, hit the beach, wiped everyone out, wiped all the buildings out. But because he was underwater, he was protected. He just saw this sudden surge of 20 meters in his depth gauge. We want that kind of safe position in terms of fear and anxiety. We want it to just pass over our heads. So Lord Krishna promises you in Bhagavad Gita. You take the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita as directly and personally given by Lord Shri Krishna, and then you'll have true success, not a fleeting moment of so-called success, but lasting success, spiritual success, beyond the changes of matter. The greatest fear is that I'll lose this human body. My next birth will be, I don't know. So many of you may be students. You have plans what to do when you finish school. If you're from India, your parents have plans for you. If you're from Australia, your parents, they just, whatever. Do whatever makes you happy. So, you have plans in either case. I'm going to apply for such and such a job. I'm going to travel. I'm going to find a partner. I'm going to start a family. The most important plan is how to preserve your status as a, at least as a human being. But no one is taught how to make plans for that. What's going to happen to you after you give up this present body? No one thinks about that. But you have plans for what you're going to do when you finish university. What about when you finish this body? What is your plan? Lord Krishna and Bhagavad Gita asks you to think about these things. You see, what is it that destroys happiness? It is fear. You cannot be happy when you're fearful. You've ever seen little birds as they're eating? They're looking over their shoulders all the time. They're so fearful. They haven't any joy. We become like that in our false attempts to enjoy. We're so full of anxiety that we can't actually enjoy what we're supposed to enjoy. This is not real pleasure. This is actually material ignorance. I don't know what real pleasure is. I don't know what is the actual process for enjoyment. I don't know who I am. Who is this entity known as me that's trying to enjoy? I don't know. All the more reason to be fearful. So my personal request is that you all conquer the greatest fear by investigating Krishna consciousness. Certainly, I would hope that you all will avoid the tyranny of choice, being inundated with so many choices that you just become on edge and in anxiety. How can I choose the best course of action? There's so many possibilities. How do I weigh up all the different alternatives and find the best thing? These kind of anxieties are wasting our human mind. If we're going to worry, the main thing we should be concerned with is, in terms of worry, what will my next body be? How do I get the present body? What will the next body be? Those are the main questions of life. Because once you get a particular body, Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, you're forced to enjoy and suffer according to the particular body type that you get. So the bodies are just individual machines for customized suffering and happiness. According to your karma, your past life, you get a particular machine known as the body to ride around with. And that machine is in accordance with how much you deserve. What is your karma? Do you deserve a good machine, a high-class machine, a trashed-out machine? Nature gives you exactly what you deserve according to your karma. I'm explaining these things because I hope that some of you will seek to make a proper solution to the problem of fear and understand what is the greatest thing to fear, that you'll lose your human body in your next life. Sometimes people tranquilize themselves with the thought that once you become a human being, you can never go lower again. But that's just their concoction. The way nature works, and you can experience this, is that nature matches a particular body to your particular type of consciousness. That's why in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna is constantly beckoning, bring your consciousness to me. Always think of me. To the extent that we do that, to that extent we are successful. Without spiritual success, without the spiritual success of Krishna consciousness, we're doomed to just suffer in the desert of material anxiety. A false array of choices. All right. I think we'll stop here for now and see. Maybe some of you have some questions. Yes?
Maharaj, how can we relate Krishna consciousness in so-called our power of choices? Ultimately, we need to make the material choices. How to know how much is too much means? You know, we should make an at least intelligent choice. About at least material choices.
Such as, for example?
Maybe like what you said, selecting a car, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what I got is the best. How this tendency should come?
How it should happen?
Yep. How can
Krishna in the life of a transcendentalist, in the life of a Krishna conscious person?
Yes, but choosing material choices.
Mm. You should use your intelligence to make the best choice you can, understanding it's not the most important thing in your life. You don't so personally invest in the choice that you become even clinically depressed because it didn't turn out to be the best choice. It's not the main thing in life. What's the main choice you should be making in life? Choosing your next body. You can determine that now. You should be thinking, what are the advantages and disadvantages of various types of bodies? Why is the human body special? And how can I consciously choose a human body again in my next life? Otherwise, in terms of the practical choices you make living in this world, you should just know it's not very important. And you certainly shouldn't be fooled that, now I'm sitting in my new car, I feel satisfied. You should know that that feeling will go very quickly. Don't take pleasure in choosing material things. Just do the necessary for keeping body and soul together and leave them back. Don't make a big deal out of it. But then there's expectation of you, yes?
It gives a sense of that I use my intelligence. It gives that satisfaction.
But there's expectation of you. Speaking in general, you should succeed. You should get the highest position possible with the greatest financial reward possible. And then when you visit India on holidays, you visit all your relatives, and they can take pride in your achievements, your accomplishments. Being general, yeah. This is not very important. There are two different types of knowledge. There is knowledge of the ordinary, that is called in Sanskrit, shukha gyan, ordinary knowledge. And then there's divya gyan, transcendental or divine knowledge. The best use of our choice is to choose divya gyan, divine enlightenment. Not ordinary choices, which you have to make, but they're not very important. They're not central to you. You keep them at a minimum. Anything else? Yes.
How can we share that Krishna consciousness is in the hands of spiritualism? Because there are so many other religions. So when I sit in this Baptist room in church, they all say to me that this is the true God, and you read the Bible, this is the true way to follow spiritualism. How can we share that Krishna consciousness is the right way?
As a human being, you have the responsibility to find the most comprehensive knowledge of God available. Just like, I don't know you. I can't even see you. I have my glasses on, which are meant for reading, so I can't see with them so far. So I don't know you. But if I said, a man just asked me something, would I be wrong?
No.
But it doesn't show much knowledge of him, does it? Hey man, who asked the question back there? I can't see you, but it's, hey man back there, you who asked the question. I'm not wrong in addressing you in that way, but it really shows I don't know you. So people talk about God, but they have no knowledge of God. They're not wrong for saying like that, but they should recognize they need to know everything about the Supreme Consciousness. Not just use words. Oh God, give us this, give us that. So, as a human being, you should find the greatest storehouse of knowledge about God, the Supreme Consciousness, as possible. Here, we do not say that Krishna consciousness is right and all others are wrong. We just say Krishna consciousness is the most complete, the most exhaustive. It's like an unabridged dictionary, but we never say that the pocket dictionaries are wrong. A pocket dictionary is right. It's just, there's not much explanation and elucidation given. That's all. It's not wrong. In Bhagavad Gita, as I always say, you'll never find any verse where Lord Krishna says, just believe in me. Everywhere in Bhagavad Gita, you'll find Krishna saying, I'm going to give you the process by which, if you follow it, you'll attain experience of all the things I've explained to you. In other words, if you enter the laboratory and take up the process, you'll verify what I'm saying. So isn't that fair enough? No belief, no blind faith. So we do not say that Krishna consciousness is the only right thing. Everything else is wrong. We say it is the most comprehensive knowledge of the Supreme available, the most exhaustive knowledge, detailed knowledge of the Supreme available. And that means there can be more love. Because the more knowledge you have about the Supreme, the more you'll be able to love the Supreme, the more you'll be able to love Krishna. You can't love someone without awareness of that person. It's their qualities, their activities, their form, their individuality that attracts you. Similarly, you cannot have a loving relationship with the Supreme Source of everything without knowledge, without personal specific knowledge. So that is the greatest thing that is missing today. Personal knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. There's a great and vast difference from understanding God as the controller and understanding God as Krishna. It's as big as the gap in understanding between my calling you man and my understanding, knowing what is your name, where you're from, what you do, what you like, what you don't like. There's a huge difference between that and just am I just calling you amen, Brad? Ask the question. We invite you to study the Krishna Conscious books and see for yourself. You'll see that there's no greater information about what is the Supreme than in these books. And especially in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna is speaking himself and explaining himself. So reading these books is an opportunity that's not to be missed. Do you really want to find out the answer to your question? For now, though, all you can say is, maybe it is that Krishna consciousness is the best. You can't say no. Just say maybe. Now, if you read Bhagavad Gita with that hypothetical attitude, it's okay. Maybe this is the best, so I'll read this book and I'll make up my mind when I get to the end. That's a favorable way of approaching Bhagavad Gita. So don't let the fact that there are so many choices of spiritual paths make you depressed. Don't get cynical and jaded trying to survive in the spiritual marketplace. Educate yourself as to what is genuine spiritual knowledge. Genuine spiritual knowledge begins by understanding we're not the body. The body and mind are external. Most people never get that far. They're taught, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not lust over thy neighbor's wife, thou shalt not do this, thou shalt not lie. But they're never taught, thou shalt not think that you are the body. That's the first step in transcendental knowledge, to understand you're not the body. Whether male or female, Australian, New Zealander, Indian, you're not it. How many of you would go around saying, I'm Calvin Klein? What's that? I'm Gucci. Is that a Gucci thing? Yes. You're not the label of the clothes that you wear or the shoes that you wear. Those things are external. So if you went around telling people, I'm Calvin Klein, just see my jeans or just see my shirt. I'm Nike. People would think you're crazy. They say, look, you're just wearing that apparel, but you're not it. Similarly, according to the standard of Krishna consciousness, no matter how religious that you think you are, if you think you are the body, then you're no more intelligent than an animal. Yes?
Just regarding the opportunity cost you have talked about it.
Yes.
As you say, the more options we have, the more opportunities we have, the more unhappy we are, the more fear we have.
That, yes, because maybe another choice would have been better.
Yes, but there is also an existence of fear when you don't have many opportunities, many options. Like, suppose you have only one option and one opportunity. You have that option, you have that opportunity. Then there's a fear that arises that you will lose this one and you don't have another one. So how do you overcome that of losing that one option or one opportunity?
The best thing, whether you have few material options or many material options, the best thing is to understand what is the actual important choice in life. The actual important choice in life is, what will my next body be? what body will you get next? Whether you have few options available on your television or many options available, still, the most important choice is what will my next body be? How are my actions now leading me to another body? So yes, it is true that those who have no options, they're fearful. But it's also true that those who have so many options, they're also fearful. Best to live a simple life in Krishna consciousness. That's the way to conquer fear. Yes, in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains, Sarva Yoni Shikondriya Murtaya Sambhavatya Tasam Brahma Mahajyoniya. Krishna says, you know, all living entities appearing in material nature, for all of them, Krishna says, I am the seed-giving father. So why, you ask, are we here in material illusion? And why hasn't Krishna taken us back to the spiritual kingdom? You see, there cannot be love if there's force. We are Krishna's parts. Krishna is the Supreme Consciousness. We are the tiny parts of Krishna. We are tiny, spiritually conscious entities. But we cannot compare in size or quantity to Krishna. So, in order for there to be love in the relationship between the individual consciousness and the Supreme Consciousness, there has to be choice. How many of you want someone to be forced to love you? Is that the kind of love you want? Suppose you found out, after being in a relationship for a few years, that the person only wanted to be with you for some ulterior motives. Maybe they wanted a visa to stay in Australia or something like that. That happens all the time. How would you feel? First you thought the person was so attractive to you, and then you find out that, no, the person just had an ulterior motive. You want voluntary love, not forced or contrived love. You want to know that a person is choosing you and focusing upon you voluntarily. Then you'll think you might be happy. So, if you don't want forced love, why do you think Krishna should accept that? Krishna's not going to force you to become Krishna conscious. Lord Krishna is not going to force you to go back to the spiritual world. He always presents choices. But if your choice capacity is so consumed by materialistic choices over such trivia, then you'll never be able to concentrate to make the right choice in Krishna consciousness. Your choice muscles are totally depleted by just choosing about so many material things. Therefore, we should live a simple life so that we can voluntarily revive our love for Krishna. Krishna is giving us all the information necessary. But we're proud of our little tiny selves, aren't we? So, the person who asked the question, Are you a married man, or are you engaged, or single? How would you like it that probably you'll marry in the future, yes? Yes?
No.
No. Alright, so how would you like it if you were considering that the young lady said to you, I don't want to choose you, you should just take me? You wouldn't like that. You'd say, I want to feel it. That you're choosing me, that you voluntarily want to be with me. No, just, you know, I don't want to think about it. I don't want to make any conscious choice for you. Just let it happen. If it happens, okay. If I wind up in your house, I wind up in your house. How would you feel? No, you want to get the egoistic rush feeling that someone's choosing you, that someone appreciates you as the topmost. You don't want such a casual kind of approach. So why should we wish that upon Krishna? Just take us, Krishna. If you really are interested in us, just let us show up in the spiritual world somehow. No. Krishna wants that you develop your attraction for him in the maximum way. The highest definition of God is to understand that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. This understanding is far beyond understanding God as the creator or maintainer. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. So why does the supreme enjoyer want forced love? No, the supreme enjoyer wants voluntary love, your proper use of choice. But instead of choosing to love Krishna, we're choosing this TV channel, that TV channel, this brand, this mark, that brand, that mark. And we think, oh, I am so wise and mature. I know how to choose the best products.
And excuse me, I want to ask you, people, I think that people should have some certain drugs of measure that they will have enough power to work with. But if you, if they have no drug of measure, I think that people are not enough power to work with. Thank you.
What is that?
People should have some stress or some pressure. If they don't, then they won't have enough power to do work.
No, we don't want stress. The intelligent person doesn't need the stick of stress to motivate him or her. We want to develop our intelligence in such a way that we'll voluntarily choose the best course of action. We don't need stress as a stick to, you know, push us in the right direction. We want to be directed from within based on high consciousness. Rather than having stress push us, we want to take shelter of Lord Krishna's teachings in Bhagavad Gita. We'll allow those instructions to push us. The pushings of stress are for fools. The most intelligent person wants to be pushed by the instructions of the Supreme. That is the most favorable position to attain. Why be pushed around by strain and stress? Instead, be lovingly guided by Lord Krishna. What does Krishna explain in Bhagavad Gita? Tesham Sutayuktanam Bhajatam Priti Purvakam. To those who constantly perform bhakti yoga, the yoga of transcendental love and devotion, I will personally teach them how to attain the highest destination, how to attain the spiritual realm. Krishna promises that. So this is what motivates us, not stress. Stress means wrong choice. Stress is material nature's way of letting you know you're not choosing properly with your lifestyle. Anything else?
Thank you, Krishna Maharaj. I try to live a quite simple life in basic necessities. But I find actually we all living in this material world need some material things. And I just moved to that sort of thing of people. What it costs to go around in the end and everything. And my goal was about 10 days ago. Is that a lesson I have to learn from that?
These things are a fact of life. So you didn't put all your hopes for happiness in that car, did you?
No. Actually, it's like, you know, I wasn't really attached to it. And my feelings is like, you know, something was on your car. Nothing happened to me or the one who was driving the car. And but still, it's like, you know, it's not that I'm sad that I was the car, but it's like the facilities that I was or having the car has been removed from me. So
did you have insurance?
Not yet.
Next time they have insurance. And what will happen when you lose the vehicle known as your material body? Then what? What will your next body be? Now you're thinking, what's your next car going to be, right? Yeah? So you have to choose. But what will your next body be? You're going to lose that present body you have now. What will the next one be? Are you thinking about that choice also? Okay. So, Lord Krishna's teachings in Bhagavad Gita give the best insurance policy. How to get the best possible body in your next life. So just like you should not drive a car without insurance, similarly you should not drive around in this material body without insurance. Again.
What is the best insurance policy for spiritual?
The best insurance policy for the human body is Lord Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita. So, these were very nice questions, and thank you for your attention. It's always a pleasure for me to come to Melbourne, intellectual city of Australia. You know what the Sydney siders say? They say, of course they're more intellectual in Melbourne. The weather's so bad they have to stay inside and read all the time. But it is a fact that Melbourne audiences are, I find, to be the most deliberative and contemplative. And of course we have many overseas students here from India, and they're kind of halfway in between. They got one foot in India, one foot in Australia, so they're trying to find some firm ground. You can't go back to India and be a full Indian anymore, because you've been out of the box. But you can't become a complete Australian either. So you're in a special niche. So the combination is very nice of the thoughtful Melbourne Australians and the very thoughtful Indian overseas students. And I hope that you will think deeply about what we discussed and not become victimized by the illusion of material achievement and acquisition. Live a simple life and maximize your spiritual choices. That is my great hope for you all. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. So, our next program is we request you all to stand and please participate for a little while in this wonderful kirtan, the experience that most of us from India have been and has heard kirtan sitting down, but I request you all today, please experience this kirtan in the form of a dance and have this experience, and this will be one of the once in a life, you know, you will never forget this experience. Please participate with us. Following to that, we'll have a wonderful feast which will be served downstairs very shortly. So please don't go without taking the feast. Please leave your packages on the sides of the wall, and Krishna Prabhu will start the kirtan.